Earners, what's up? Look, in the world of personal finance management, finding the right tool is crucial. If you've been relying on Mint to keep your personal finances in check, I got a mix of news for you. Mint is closing down. But here's a silver lining. Monarch Money is stepping up as the go-to financial app, and users, including myself, are making the switch with a smile. Before Monarch, juggling my finances felt like navigating a stormy sea. Other apps either lacked features or were too cumbersome. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design turned financial management from a chore into a breeze. The constant updates, well, that's the cherry on top. But what truly set it apart for me was its collaboration feature. Money matters can strain relationships, but Monarch brings peace to the table. The app's collaboration tools allow my partner and I to seamlessly manage our finances together. We aligned on our budgets, tracked our cash flow, and even planned our future goals all in one place. Speaking of goals, be it saving for a down payment, your dream vacation, or your children's education, Monarch simplifies it all. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal hailed it as the best budgeting app. This isn't just an app. It's the next generation of personal finance management, ad-free, intuitive, and always evolving with you in mind. Now look, Monarch isn't just another app. It's the all-in-one solution, from effortlessly importing your data from Mint to customizing your dashboard to your heart's content. Monarch respects your privacy with a strict no ads, no data selling policy. This is financial management as it should be, focused on you. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Mondays. That's monarchmoney.com/Mondays for your extended 30-day free trial.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Artificial intelligence is obviously taking over the world, but very few people are in power to actually program these artificial intelligence programs, right? And consciously or subconsciously, the artificial intelligence is getting programmed in the likeness of the person that's actually programming it, right? With their ingrained biases, with their ingrained opinions, with it's just human nature. Very few black people, very few women, very few a variety of anybody other than a certain tech group of white men are actually in position to shape how artificial intelligence thinks, which could be extremely dangerous because if you have 3% of the 1% of the population that's programming 100% of artificial intelligence, the artificial intelligence is going to think just like the 1% of the programmers. And they're going to have, like I said, biases. So now you have artificial intelligence that's racist, that has bias based on the programming that has been done. So are you guys thinking about that? And if so, are you having any level of input, or are you looking to enforce some regulation on the programming of artificial intelligence so that it has some level of more diversity as far as the computers, the way that they're actually programmed to think?
It's a great question. So the administration has issued an executive order on artificial intelligence. There's a lot of factors and a lot of planks, but to your point, one of the most important aspects of that executive order is that AI needs to be safe and that there needs to be testing and that it should be free of those kinds of biases. But I think that the problem that you've just teed up, I think, goes back to why antitrust is so important. Antitrust is about the dispersion of economic opportunity. It's about removing structural barriers to economic opportunity. And the very fact that a small number of people, whoever they are, can control the market experiences of potentially hundreds of millions of Americans and people globally is just like right on the nose about what antitrust is intended to enforce. And so to me, it sets up a choice between two paradigms. One is trying to fix flawed inputs, trying to make sure that, you know, data sets and the objective function of some of these algorithms is, you know, doesn't offend law and policy for good reason. And there are some people who favor that. As an antitrust enforcer, I'm thinking about the entire power problem. And so to me, I would not want one company, a small number of companies, to have such outsized power. And so I favor structural approaches, which is to say, making sure that there isn't that kind of power in the first instance over AI. And again, that is consistent with the anti-monopoly tradition in this country and the spirit of the antitrust laws, right? Like our first antitrust law is called the Sherman Act, and Senator John Sherman makes these impassioned pleas on the floor of the Senate in 1890. And he says that this stuff is antithetical to our form of government, that if we wouldn't endure an emperor, we shouldn't endure the autocrats of trade. And I think that that's really resonant now, right? Like we think about the dominance of these companies and how four men, you know, maybe a few others are, again, having outsized control of every aspect of American life. And I don't believe it can be justified on legal antitrust grounds or just basic notions of the foundations for democracy.
Any thoughts on what could be done to help Black-owned banks close the gap between how many of us are doing business with them versus their counterparts like JP Morgan, Bank of America, et cetera?
Sure. So banks are special financial institutions, and there's actually a long history of how antitrust has been concerned about the financiers in consolidating important industries. At the antitrust division, we're thinking about bank merger policy because we know that 49% of all Black households in America are actually underbanked, compared to just 15% of white Americans. And those statistics are according to the Federal Reserve. And Black Americans are looking to costlier and often predatory alternatives to banking institutions. And so the other problem is that when there's a lot of consolidation of banks, they become less sensitive to the needs of communities, which ultimately affects the wealth of communities. And so we are rethinking our bank merger guidelines to be more lucid to all of the ways that bank merger consolidation can really harm communities when they are further and further away from communities. I should also say that there's a huge role of other federal agencies, to include the Federal Reserve, the CFPB, the OCC, and others who are tasked with thinking about all of the non-antitrust and all of the non-competition reasons to either permit bank mergers or not. And one of those important factors is convenience and need factors. And so I suspect that they will be more focused on the needs of communities because the consequences can really have awful knock-on effects for Black business formation, Black home ownership, you know, and it's not just Black people, right? There's, you know, really harrowing accounts of how bank consolidation has hurt folks all across the country and how mergers have really hollowed out the middle of the country, which has a number of social, political, and economic consequences, you know, for all of us and for the health of our democracy.
Yeah, the banking numbers, the statistics are pretty alarming. The six largest banks companies have amassed as many assets as all other bank holding companies combined. I mean, these numbers are pretty startling. There's one last statistic I want to read you here. The One United, the largest Black-owned bank in the U.S., manages $625 million in assets. In comparison, Bank of America manages nearly $2.5 trillion. And so those numbers are pretty staggering. When we talk about monopoly, it feels right. When we saw what happened with regional banks, yeah. We saw what happened with minority-owned banks. As they continue to consolidate, that gap will widen even further. I want to go back to something that Shadi was talking about when we talk about artificial intelligence. I wonder how you guys are approaching this in terms of the job market. When we talk about working wage, when we talk about workers, there's a fear from people that jobs will be replaced and automation will become at the forefront of the new job movement. A lot of those jobs are probably manned by people that look like us right now. And so how are we looking at this from an anti-competitive standpoint?
You know, there's an entire body of research on the failures of competition in labor markets that if we had another 5 hours to talk about, I would love to take you through all of it. On the AI example in particular, I think that there are already realized fears of how artificial intelligence can make the conditions of work or the availability of work more tenuous. It is a fact that technological innovation can wipe out a number of jobs. Sometimes that's for reasons having nothing to do with violations of law, to include the antitrust laws. But other times when there are really stark asymmetries of power between employers and their workers, there's good reason to think about whether there's a competition problem in the market. I recently read, and I won't name the company, but I recently read that one of the sharing economy companies is thinking about using AI to figure out what wages or fares to offer workers. And that struck me as remarkably concerning, if not dystopian. It is worth thinking more about whether there are failures of competition or market structures that allow them to do that. But the fact is, some people are very desperate. And if your prior willingness to take extremely low wages essentially means that companies are going to offer you more of that, that is a reason to be concerned. And so we are taking all of this information in at the Justice Department. We're thinking deeply about it. And if we believe that the facts and the law warrant law enforcement on those issues, we will not hesitate to do so.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.